welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am ready for a whole hour of quilting creativity. We've got all kinds of topics, and I've got several guests, and so let's get to it. Sandy Blackwell is here with me first. She is an amazing designer, and she is so creative that she found a problem and created a solution for it. And I thought that that was extraordinarily clever, and she's going to come on and tell us a little bit about her work. So I'm excited to have you here, Sandy.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me. I enjoy being invited.
Tell me a little bit of your backstory. How did you discover quilt making?
Well, I have to admit, I've been either a crafter or a sewer for as long as I can remember that I could hold a needle. Mm-hmm. And always in the back of my mind, I just had the idea of quilting, even though I knew no one who quilted, didn't have any information about it. It was just always there. When my children were little, I walked through a store and I saw a magazine about a miniature quilt. And I thought to myself, well, I could afford it. I might find the time for it. And now's the time.
Oh, my.
Basically, that's how I got started. But I'd have to say that it has become quite an obsession for me.
Oh, my gosh. You started with miniatures. It's like,
yes.
What a woman, you know? You didn't know, right?
No, I didn't. But actually, at one point, I made a very, very miniature that won a lot of awards. It was a hexagon, grandmother's flower garden, similar mm-hmm. design. The hexagons were little more than a quarter of an inch in size. I hand-basted every one to a piece of freezer paper, hand-pieced them together, and then after 325 of them, I decided to quit.
Oh, my goodness. I bet it's gorgeous.
I like it. I finally ended up having it framed because I did like people touching it all the time. But that was the end of my miniature career.
Right. So tell me a little bit about your favorite part of making a quilt, because I think you and I have one of the same favorite parts.
My favorite part is, first of all, designing, then selecting the fabric and the colors.
Yes.
I could spend hours just going through a store, just touching the fabric and then creating. Sometimes I even buy fabric and create designs based on the fabric.
Mm-hmm. Now, you teach a lot, and what happens like when people, you know, the people come into class who are not as comfortable with that part of the process? How do you help them pick their fabrics?
Well, this, again, is one of those topics that you can talk for hours, but I have a few basic guidelines that I give students, one, to kind of reassure them what they're doing, and to just give them a guide. First thing I tell them, you've dressed yourself today. Obviously, you have some sense of color and putting things together. So take the confidence that you have with dressing yourself and apply it to picking out fabric. Second, when you're going to do a quilt project, the first thing you need to do is pick out a focus fabric. Being focus fabric, something that has multiple colors in it, or a design where you can add a lot of color to it. Once you select a focus fabric, a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that on the selvage of quality fabric, you have little colored dots of the colors that are used in the creation of that particular design. Some people aren't aware of that. So say, for example, you pick a focus fabric and you want to add a yellow to it. Then you go to these fabric dots and they show you the color yellow that you should be looking for. Mm-hmm. A lot of people find that just having something that they can match it to makes it a little bit easier for them. And lastly, and I think this is a factor that most people don't realize, when you have a quilt, you do not spend your life with that quilt 6 inches from your face. You look at the quilt across the bed, across mm-hmm. the couch, hanging on the wall, across a room, yet people continue to go select fabric holding it 6 inches from their face. So you probably know what I mean. Once you stack that fabric and you walk 10 feet away from it, all of a sudden you can see better what you're putting together and what you're creating.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an excellent point, Sandy, because people forget when you're up close and personal with it, that's a whole different perspective than
exactly, exactly. And it's surprising the people that don't realize that. And as soon as you tell them these few hints, then I can sometimes even see the confidence in the quilters as to selecting the fabric. And I always tell quilters, there are no bad choices, but there could be better choices.
Right. I like that a lot. That's good. So, Sandy, you, in your quilt making, you were going along merrily your way, and all of a sudden you ran into a problem and you created a solution for it. And it's all about your signature product now and style. Tell me a little bit about it.
Okay, well, my technique is called square agonals. Basically, it is a way to put a quilt on point without cutting any corner or setting triangles, with doing any math calculations or sewing in diagonal rows. The process is simple enough. You sew all your blocks into straight rows. Now, the number of blocks and rows, of course, will vary depending on the finished design. You make two specific cuts so that you have three sections. And when you reassemble those three sections, you now have a quilt design that is on point.
Now, why did you decide to come up with this solution? Were you aggravated by putting things on point, or what happened?
Definitely. Putting quilts on point has always been one of the things I stayed away from. I just never felt confident with it. In fact, the process that I disliked the most was sewing the blocks in diagonal rows. However, I am considered a West Virginia artisan. I live in West Virginia, and there is a major artisan center in the middle of West Virginia called Tamarack. I was fortunate enough that I was juried into this particular facility, and it's only
gorgeous.
West Virginia artisans can sell products there after they have been juried in by the committee. Well, one of my most popular lines is a simple patchwork quilt that I antique it so that it looks like an old quilt, but the blocks are on point. And I would literally have to make 10 to 20 of these items at a time. And it was just very frustrating because of all the things I make, I dislike making them the most, but those were the items I needed to make the most of. So one day I had several of these quilts just laying on the table, and I realized if they're all sitting next to each other, the setting triangles next to the next one becomes the whole square again. So I just had in the back of my mind that there had to be an easier way to create the on-point quilt. I'm not a mathematician. That is by no means my forte. But necessity, and you know, the mother of invention, and the frustration of trying to get past this, I started making paper quilts and cutting them and twisting them and turning them and folding them, just determined that there had to be another way. And lo and behold, after several weeks of messing with my paper quilts, I came to a configuration that did exactly what I wanted it to do.
Yay.
So, of course, I tested it again and again and found out that I think I've got something. So I took this discovery up to my husband, who happens to be a mathematician-chemist, and I said, look, I think I've discovered something. Well, very calmly, he pulls off this mathematical book and says, oh, yes, that's based on a field of mathematics called dissection.
I said,
why didn't you tell me this? So basically, I didn't discover anything new. However, I did find that there is a field of mathematics called dissection. Basically, it claims that you can take a mathematical shape, cut it into three or more pieces, and reassemble it into the same or another mathematical shape. So I just happened to stumble upon it, but I have since tweaked it, added to it, and now I can make an on-point quilt for any size quilt, any number of blocks, with sashing, without sashing, square, rectangular.
So, amazing. That
thank
is so
you.
Fun, Sandy.
It has been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
Now, I want to tell people that you not only, you know, you verbalized it here and kind of walked us through it, but, you know, they can buy a book from you. You've written some books, so they have patterns and have it there. Plus, you have a Craftsy class.
Yes, I do. I was lucky enough to have my my class released in March, and it is called Sensational Square Agonals. Throughout the course of the class, there are three projects that you can create, the smallest being a table runner made with charm squares. So it's a real easy project if you want to attempt a new technique without a lot of fabric involved. The second project is a wall hanging with a medallion type design. And the last project is a bed-size quilt that's made traditionally 12-piece baskets set on point. And the baskets are all facing different directions.
Wonderful. Now, we have about 1 minute. So just real quick, I know that you like to use starch. Can you tell me what that does for you?
Yes. Because my technique, you cut the block, you cut your fabric on the bias, it's real important that you try and avoid any additional stretch. So I always use starch because what it does is gives a firmness and a stability to the fabric. And using that in conjunction with my optional guide tape helps stabilize those bias edges, so when you finish putting all your pieces together, your quilt is still square.
Wonderful, Sandy. This has been great to have you on here and share with us.
Well, Pat, it's been a delight, and again, I really appreciate the fact that you've invited me, and hopefully we can meet again.
I hope so. Everybody go out and visit Sandy Blackwell at stitchedbybuy.com or check out her Craftsy class, and we are going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Kim Lepasek here. She is from Persimmon Dreams, and her quilts are amazing. She puts together fabrics that you and I might never think of, and her quilts just sing. They are incredible. So I've been watching Kim and chatting with her for years, and so I want you to meet her now. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Oh, I am so pleased to have you here. People need to come see your quilts. They're just... They are just crazy good stuff.
Thank you.
How did you find quilt making, Kim?
I actually made my very first quilt when I was 5. I took my mom's rags and I sewed a quilt together for my brother, and it included the furry toilet seat cover. So, I've always been creating. And then when I met my mother-in-law, future mother-in-law at the time, she's an amazing quilter. So we would actually go for dinner on Tuesdays, and I would take quilting lessons from her and get a really good meal while I was in college. So that was awesome.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
A twofer, right? Lessons,
yep,
and good dinner. Okay. Well, you have a busy life. You know, you have a family, and your family owns an apple farm, and then you write a lot on your blog, and you host all kinds of fun stuff. What kind of things go on? What do you do?
So my biggest thing on my blog is something I call Project Quilting. Mm-hmm. I run it to help inspire other people. There was a time where I was just trying to make quilts that I thought people would buy and that they would sell. And they just weren't, like, seeing or I wasn't feeling them anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered the show called Project Runway, and I thought the challenges were incredible. What the people came up with was incredible. But I didn't know how to sew clothes. I knew how to sew quilts. So mm-hmm. I convinced my mother-in-law to post challenges weekly on my blog. And from those challenges, I found my inspiration again, and I've also encouraged many others to find their inspiration.
Now, I think that that is just incredible. It's probably when I probably first started really, you know, seeing your work was the Project Quilting. How long does that run, and how does it work for the everyday person?
So it's been going since 2010, but it has definitely evolved since then. Mm-hmm. Because we do have an apple orchard, I am really, really busy from about August 15th till the end of October. So what we came up with was to do seasons of Project Quilting. The seasons run from January to March. There is a challenge posted on Sunday at noon my time, just Central Time. And people have 1 week to start and finish their quilts and post it by the next week on my blog. And that goes for 6 challenges. So you have 1 week of a challenge, and then you have a 1 week of a breather. So you can, like, do the laundry and wash some dishes and stuff.
And then you have prizes that people are competing for, right?
Yep. I have different sponsors from all across the quilting world that do things from long-arm quilting services, fabrics, books, notions, and threads. And that's all randomly drawn winners. Mm-hmm. I actually have 3 really adorable girls. Of course they're adorable. They're mine. but they pick from a hat. I write everybody's name on a hat, and we do an old-fashioned from a hat drawing to see who wins those great prizes.
That's fun. Do you girls have fun with that?
Oh, they love it. Or they either love it or they hate it. And I think even the pictures where they're, like, not enjoying it are hilarious. So, you know, they're still little.
Yeah.
Mommy's always making them take pictures.
Yes, yes. They have to be in the center of everything. let's talk a little bit about your quilts themselves. Because tell me a little bit about how you pick your fabrics. Do you plan, like, I know that you're doing like mystery blocks of the month, because you're doing the one that I'm hosting. And so, mm-hmm. of course, you don't know what the quilt's going to look like. But for a quilt that you know what it's going to look like, how do you get that fabric started?
So when I go shopping for fabric, I rarely have an idea of what fabric I want to buy or what projects I'm going to do with that fabric. Mm-hmm. I just sort of look and, like, grab whatever catches my eye. And it's usually bright. I like bright colors. I like big prints. I like things you might not expect to see in your quilts. So when I pull fabrics for a project, I tend to, like, think of maybe a color scheme. And I pull fabrics from that, and then I don't actually plan if I have enough of that particular fabric to make the actual quilt. If I'm making the quilt and I happen to run out, I just pick another fabric that's going to work, and that just adds even more depth and dimension to the piece.
I think that's what makes it so fun, that your work is, it doesn't feel planned at all. It feels exuberant and happy. And it always makes me happy to see anything that you're making. It's like, oh, there's another one. You know, it's like,
well, thank you.
When we were chatting, you know, before the show, Kim, you told me that you really enjoy block of the months and sew-alongs. Why do you feel they're a good tool for a quilt maker?
So I really like them for a couple of reasons. For one, I do have 3 small children, and I have a busy life. When you do a quilt of the long or a block of the month, there's often only a few blocks you need to complete in a month. Mm-hmm. So for me to go downstairs and sew 1 block, I can accomplish that. So I've accomplished something in that month, and I still get my sewing in. I still feel like I've accomplished something, even if it's not a huge project. Mm-hmm. The other reason I really like it is I'm more of like an artsy quilter. When I first started quilting, I hated matching my corners, so mm-hmm. I decided to weave a quilt, and it turns out weaving a quilt is way more complicated than matching your corners. So by doing these different quilt alongs and blocks of the month, I've gotten a lot better at my piecing skills.
That is true. That is true with doing some sort of focused monthly thing, you're going to go and try something that you might have not picked yourself, right?
Exactly. I discovered I actually really liked doing hexagons. the English paper piecing, and I've also discovered I have no interest in ever doing another drunkard's pass block.
That's what we learn sometimes, right?
Yep, and to do one block, you can do anything in one block, you know.
Right. Now, I was also fascinated that you decided with one of the years, maybe it was last year, that you combined two blocks of the month that you were doing online into one quilt. I mean, they had absolutely nothing to do with each other, and it
was
extraordinary.
Yes, I did. I actually did the 2013 Aurifil block of the month. And then I discovered this amazing paper-pieced fairy tale block of the month that a local quilt shop was hosting.
Oh.
And the paper-pieced pieces were pretty intense. Mm-hmm. But I really liked the fact that I combined the whimsical with the traditional. Mm-hmm. And so it's called Once Upon a Time, and it's going to be in Iowa for the AQS show in October.
Oh, my gosh. That is great. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is wonderful. I would love to see it in person. I won't be there, but I'm sure you're going to see lots of pictures of it online.
Awesome.
Now, I want to go back. Why don't you describe your quilts a little bit? Because people will go to your site, Persimmon Dreams, and they can see them afterwards. But your quilts are not, they don't look traditional at all when you first look at them.
Yeah, they're definitely not traditional, and I think part of it is my color choices. I do go with brights and big prints. The other thing is I do like to do the samplers and the blocks of the month, but I don't put them together in a traditional sense. My first few I did. I put together pretty normally, but now I like to see how I can put them together so they're totally different and unique, and that I guess the worst thing a person could say about my quilts would be that it was boring. So I really do try to create a lot of interest and make you keep looking and keep finding new things in my pieces.
Yes, I can't imagine anybody would ever tell you that about your quilts.
I hope not.
Now, let's talk about big prints, because that's one thing people shy away from, because, you know, if they're cutting them up, it, you know, patchwork tends to have smaller units. So, of course, when they cut up a big print, they get these sort of strange visual pieces. What do you find exciting about that strange visual piece?
I think if you sort of pay attention as you're doing your final piecing, you can create some, like, amazing movement with those bigger prints in your quilts. So if you, like, I have a half-square triangle one I did, and it has a fairly big print in it. And just the way that you put it together, you can get it so it almost looks like that piece was cut in one certain way and then it's right over there in the other place. So your eyes just keep moving across the quilt. They're also really fun for, like, convergence. You can do some amazing applique that looks difficult but really isn't difficult because you chose this big print. I think it just adds a whole bunch to your piece.
Do you also audition the piece at all? Like, do you have, like, a windowed piece that you move around, or do you cut pieces up and try them out?
You know, I don't do a lot of that. I really follow my gut, and I just go with it. And then I guess if it looks bad, I just cut it up again, but I don't do that too often either.
Yeah. You tend to develop an eye for what's going to happen, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so
are moments where I'm, like, completely not sure where I'm going, if it's okay. I do have a design wall, which is huge, and I like to take pictures with my camera and then look actually at the quilt in my camera, and that really gets you sort of far away from the piece, and you can see if it's working or not working.
That's an excellent tip. I highly recommend that to everybody, because just like Sandy said earlier, you have to get away from your work in order to see it. Kim, this has been so much fun.
Thank you. Now, can I mention one more thing quick?
Yes.
In January of 2015, we are going to be hosting our first live Project Quilting Weekend here in Wisconsin, and we're going to have quilter Ebony Love there to provide guidance and inspiration. And she was actually the winner of the very first season of Project Quilting back in 2010.
Wonderful. And they need
really
to come and sign up for your newsletter.
For that.
Yeah, you also have a newsletter, Kim, right? So people can
sign
up. Yes, I
do.
Okay, we'll see.
I got
see
it
you.
All. No worries.
Well, we're going to take a break, and I'll be right back. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you so much.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And next up for the whole second half of the show, which is so exciting, is Susan Brubaker Knapp. She is an amazing quilt maker. She is an author. She oozes creativity, and she's a good friend. I'm just so excited because we're going to talk creativity. We're going to talk about some free embroidery that she's been doing and just a whole bunch of really fun things. Welcome to the show, Susan.
It's great to be back.
Oh, and I want to tell people your website first, because sometimes I like to look while we're talking. It's bluemoonriver.com.
That's right.
I want to sort of do a discussion on creativity, because you are amazing. You're always coming up with fresh, fun things to do. How long have you been creating things?
Well, I think I was probably at my most creative when I was a little kid, and then I think it's easy to lose touch with it, or lose the ability to get in touch with your creativity. So I have started, I think, in the past, 5 years at least, to really, in a very conscious way, try to find ways to be more creative.
I think that is the key. People, we love it. A lot of people, you and I do this as a business, but, a lot of people, this is their hobby. And
right.
They might get busy with life, right?
Yeah, but you know what? I think finding that creativity in you helps you to live your whole life in a more full way. Because creativity to me is about appreciating the beauty that is around us and finding ways to bring that into your creative work, which for me is quilt making.
That is so true. Because if I haven't quilted for a while or made anything for a while, I get really grumpy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's tapping into your creativity and using those gifts that you have. But it's also finding ways to look around you outside yourself and then pull those ideas in and use them internally in your work.
Now, I know that, you have the artist brain, Susan. I mean, I don't really have that, but you have that. And I've been watching on your Instagram feed, because you are going out and exploring the world as you walk, and you find the most amazing things to photograph. Well, tell me about this project that you're doing, because I think anybody can do this.
Well, this is a thing I started doing after my mother died about 3.5 years ago, and I was really depressed. I was having a really hard time, and I decided that I needed to find beauty in the world. And so every day I was walking my dog, and I decided I'm going to start looking for amazing things. And, I live in a middle-class neighborhood. It's not – a lot of people think I live in a botanical garden, because I take these photos of flowers and leaves and feathers and rocks and moss. It really is training your eye and training your brain and your heart to look for that beauty, to look for the things that are interesting in the environment, and then to get up close and photograph them. And it has become kind of a way of journaling my gratitude for what is out there and what's around me.
So tell me what exactly you are photographing. What are people seeing?
I'm photographing flowers, sometimes up close, and I just use my iPhone. Plain old using my iPhone to take these photos, and I get asked over and over about what camera I use, and I think people are shocked. But a lot of it is paying attention. Most people walk through their environment, and they don't really look at it. They see it, but they don't really look at it, They don't really experience in a more intimate way what is there.
Yeah, and I think that that is key, because I can just go zooming along. My brain will be like, you know, making some sort of list or something, and I'm not really stopping to observe. Because even you look at things like, and it just opens my eyes when you do that, Susan, because you might take a picture of a piece of wood, and that wood looks so darn exciting when you look at it.
But I think if you would go out with a camera or with your phone, mm-hmm. your camera phone, and mm-hmm. consciously try to take photos of things that are interesting to you, and also mm-hmm. develop it over time, it's a skill that you can learn if you practice it. And I'm out there every day walking that dog, right?
Yeah.
So it's like anything.
Now, can people
really
see these if they're not on Instagram?
Don't think they're creative. Can learn to be creative.
Yeah. Can they see your photos if they're not on Instagram?
I sometimes put some of them up on my blog, which you can reach through my website. And I put photos up on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. All right. So they can come and check it out there. Now, another thing that people do for creativity that I've done a little bit of this, and I find it extraordinarily expanding for myself, and I know that you do it a lot, or what I would call a challenge, accepting a challenge of some sort.
Right.
Yeah, you do them in a sort of much more bigger, organized way because you belong to a group, right?
I belong to a couple of different groups that have done challenges. I'm going to have, for example, I'm going to have a piece in the Reflections exhibition, which is done by Dinner at Eight Artists. And I like working within parameters because it does force you to be more creative. So, for example, in the Reflections exhibition, we had to work within a 24 by 60-inch format, vertical, which is a very tight vertical format. And that is extremely challenging, and it makes it forces you to look at possibilities and eliminate things that you might really love to do just because they won't work within that size. Mm-hmm. But also working within certain color ranges or within certain concepts forces you to brainstorm and then, you know, come up with interesting ideas that you might not have reached otherwise.
Yeah, I just love it. I've done a few. The last one I did was for the Quilt Alliance, and that was a little bit smaller format. But I think that people can – now, guilds do them a lot. Do you find that when you're traveling?
They do, and I think it's a fabulous thing to do. Whether you're a traditional quilt maker or an art quilter, those mm-hmm. challenges are great. And you can also just get together with a group of friends and, you know, maybe pick a bunch of interesting words, put them in a hat, pull them out, mm-hmm. and – have everybody work within that one word.
That is a great idea.
These challenges with a small group or a big group, but I highly recommend it as a way to jumpstart, you know, your creativity.
Yeah. Another, staying on our creativity. Another thing that you do that I would love personally to do more of is sketch. You are huge on sketching. How do you use
that tool?
But
you know what? I wasn't always. That is something that's really happened within the past 5 years because I wanted to sketch. I have no formal art training. I took art classes in high school, and that's it. And I was not a good sketcher. 10 years ago, I was pretty pitiful. And here again, it's finding the discipline to try to do it a couple times a week or every day, if you can, even for 5 minutes. And I'm starting to see that some of my sketching is going to be valuable in my fiber art and in my art quilts.
Mm-hmm. Now, for someone like me, because I think there's a lot of people who are probably like me, they think sketching is awesome, and people think, oh, you design quilts, you design fabric, you must sketch all the time. Well, I don't. I sketch when I need to design, but I know that I would be, okay, I need to design something. Let me draw it. So I know that sketching would help me. But how can a person sort of think of what to draw? I think that's always this stumbling block for me personally. It's like, okay, I'm going to draw every day. What would I draw?
Right. Well, there's so many great resources online to help people who want to sketch. But you can start with something as simple as, I'm going to sketch something on my table, my kitchen table, or I'm going to sketch where I'm having for breakfast. I'm going to sketch a common household object that I use a lot, like a stapler or a thimble. So there are things all around you, and doing something teeny tiny like that, I mean, you don't need to go out and sketch the Eiffel Tower, right? You can start with a mug that your coffee is in. Mm-hmm. So start small and start, you know, with a limited time range, too. Like, I'm going to do this in 5 minutes. because I think that that time limit also helps you be more creative, and it helps your more intuitive side of your brain take over and just do the drawing if you know that you only have a limited amount of time. So those are recommendations for people just getting started.
Yeah, and I think the limited amount of time is perfect because otherwise you procrastinate.
Yep, it seems overwhelming and you don't do it.
Yeah. Right. It's a blank page sitting there. Now, well, I had Jamie Fingal on here, and I know that you guys are massive friends. And she had talked about this little sketchbook that she bought, which actually had little blocks already in the sketchbook so that she just sketches in the little blocks.
And, you know, some people do, and Jamie does this too, where her sketches are more like doodles in a lot of ways. So if you are intimidated even by the word sketch, think about doodling. Just expand your doodling. You might start with patterns and then doodle simple drawings of things.
Like people have sort of done those Zentangles, which, yeah, they look a lot like free motion quilting, some of the designs. So it's a way to just get your pen and your hand going on the paper.
Yes, absolutely. And they translate beautifully into quilting designs.
Yeah. Now, you have several DVDs and books, and I know we're going to talk about some of them later, but is there anything that you have that addresses this that people could watch you talk about it?
About free motion stitching or?
Or, no, just creativity. Any of your?
I think, well, it's in all of them. I think probably the most creative ones that I have are on my whole cloth painting techniques. And that's something really interesting because when I teach whole cloth painting, which is starting with white fabric and using acrylic paint to paint, and I usually do realistic things. And I'm just, when I teach that class, it is so much fun to see people just light up when they realize that they can do that, because a lot of people don't think that they can paint. And once you teach them the basic techniques for transferring over the main lines in a photograph onto fabric and then learning to shade and tint and add the highlights and shadows, that they can do it. They're amazed that they're able to do it. And it's so fulfilling as a teacher to see that happen.
What kind of paints are you using? We have like about a minute until the break.
We're using, they're acrylic paints, and they are more fluid acrylic paints. Mm-hmm. I really love the ones from Pro Chemical and Dye. You can use Jacquard or Golden. There's lots of them that are in craft stores. But you're looking for an acrylic paint that's more fluid, not that comes in tubes like toothpaste consistency.
Oh, okay. And now do you also have to add something so that your fabric doesn't become stiff? Like years ago, we used to add to the acrylics a fabric softener.
Right. Some people add what's called fabric medium to the stiffer acrylic paints, but the fluid ones don't need that. You can just take them straight out of the bottle and paint. It does change the hand of the fabric somewhat, but it won't be super crunchy.
Okay, yes, because I remember that from years ago. It's like if you didn't, it would crackle and you wouldn't
want
that on
a piece. No, you want to be able to quilt through this when you're done.
How big are your whole cloths?
They range. You know, I started working a little bit smaller because it's great to be able to put small pieces in my carry-on bag when I fly to teach. Plus, I can get a lot more. I can play a lot more if I'm working small than if I'm working real big. But I have done larger sizes.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break, Susan, and we're going to come back and talk some more.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am talking to Susan Brubaker Knapp from Blue Moon River. Susan, we were just talking about the whole cloth, and you were telling us about the paints that you use and how you can work small and then move up. But describe a little bit more about what the images are that you teach with that workshop, because whole cloth for like a traditional quilter wouldn't be painted on.
Right. So this is, we start with white fabric, and I've started teaching some classes. Usually it's a two-day or longer class where people bring in their own photographs that they've taken. And I have them basically trace the lines in the photograph so that they have a rough outline of what they're going to be doing. It's almost like creating your own paint by number, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can put that traced image underneath the white fabric, and you can see the lines through it. So it's a lot less like you're a Van Gogh and a lot more like paint by numbers at that point. So you have those guidelines.
Okay, well, that sounds less intimidating.
Oh, it's not hard. I mean, people really are intimidated by this, but it is not hard. I can tell you, I've never had someone run screaming from this class. So it's so much fun, and people are, you know, I think part of what you do as a teacher, I've discovered, is to be a psychologist and to help people get past their fears and their inhibitions and their feelings of inadequacy, that they can't do something. And if you can figure out what's happening in their brain that's making them feel like they can't do something, then you can tap them into those skills and that power that's in them, and they do amazing work, you know. So these people learn to mix the colors. They learn about value, which is super important to make sure that you get your dark shadows and your bright highlights in there. Once they've started rolling and they understand the basic concept, they are truly amazed at what they are able to achieve in that class.
Yeah, and if you haven't looked at Susan's work, go on out to her site, because that's the kind of thing she's talking about. They're just, I mean, just amazing. We're going to switch gears here. We're going to talk a little bit about one of your DVDs that just came out called Fabulous Finishes. I am so excited about this one. yes, because we want to finish, don't we? That's
right. And, you know, this is one of those basic techniques kind of DVDs, you know. A lot of people have trouble with bindings, or they don't know about facings. Facings are a technique that I use to finish most of my art quilts when I don't want a binding on it. So I don't want a frame around it. I want it to look more like a painting, right, or something that you would hang on the wall as art. So I cover bindings and facings and pillowcase turn, which is a super quick, easy way. Also talk about how to hang art quilts, because that can be tricky too. And there are ways to put slats in so that you can hang an art quilt on a single nail. So the DVD kind of covers a lot of different finishing techniques so you can get that thing done and display it.
Now, have you ever had to finish, do you ever make quilts that are an odd size and then have to hang them, you know, like octagons or things like that?
No, I haven't. I really kind of stick to the square rectangle shape. I have done scalloped binding in my for my first book, which was a traditional needle turn applique book, because, you know, I'm a multiple personality disorder quilter, and I kind of do
it
all. I like to piece. I like to applique. But that quilt had a scalloped binding on it, which was pretty challenging. I'd never learned how to do that. But no, I don't really do really unusual shapes. Have you done any like that?
No, but I've thought about it, you know, like with having like a circle even. So would your slats help with that?
With a really unusual shape, I'd probably do a pillowcase turn so that I could just turn it inside out and it would be finished.
Yeah. That would be good. I didn't really ever think about that as sort of a fine finish on quilts. I have to go examine quilts now a little bit more next show I go to.
And a pillowcase turn isn't really a fine finish. I tend to do it on smaller pieces and things that maybe I'm going to stitch to a mat and frame or something like that. And I also tend to do it for small pieces that are for class samples that I just have to get done quickly.
That's perfect. Do you then do sort of a mock stitch around the edge of it, you know, like on the inside, like a quarter inch or something?
No, I don't usually. I just turn it in. I do it so that the binding or the batting is inside before I do my turn. And so when I turn it inside out, the batting is basted basically to the backing of the quilt. So it's in place and it can't move and shift around. So then I turn it inside out and I take out my basting that's holding the batting in place. And then I do all my quilting. And when the quilting's done, it's done. But you have to be careful that none of the backing fabric peeks up around the, you know, to the front. So it is a little tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a little practice.
Yes.
Like most things, right?
Yep. It's all, it truly is all about practice.
I know. I was telling somebody, Susan, this has popped in my head, so I'll share it. Somebody was talking about learning to applique, and I'm like, well, you know, people are afraid of that. But, you know, when you learn to piece, you weren't good at that either.
Right. Yeah, I mean, people come up to me and say, oh, I'll never be as good a free motion stitcher as you. And I say, well, how many hours have you practiced? Because I've probably practiced 10,000 hours. So you can't compare yourself to somebody who's practiced 10,000 hours. You just have to start yourself. And I truly believe that almost everybody can be really good at something if they practice it enough. You've got to want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wanting to do it is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember free motion quilting in the beginning. I wanted to do it so badly. And I even like upgraded machines because I realized, you know, my like $50 machine wasn't going to be good.
Right.
And, you know, it's like figured out it was the machine. It wasn't me. So
I had that same thing happen because I was sewing on my mom's 1957 Singer sewing machine when I first learned. And I got to the point where there were just things that I couldn't really do on that machine. It's, I still have it. It sews a beautiful straight stitch. But sometimes you do need to invest in equipment to get you to do it. And then beyond that, you've got to practice.
That's true. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about teaching. Let's do a little extra chat because you have taught in some other countries. And I've taught in some other countries, but you've done it a lot more. And we both went to South Africa together.
Yes, it was fun.
What do you find when you go to another country? Now, a lot of the countries that you've taught in and I've taught in are English-speaking, so you don't have to have an interpreter. But it's still not, it's still different, isn't it?
It is. It's different because of the cultural norms. Sometimes, especially in English-speaking countries or in Europe, you have to stop for tea, right, in the afternoon, things like that. I also found that I was told when I went to teach in Australia and New Zealand that the students would be very, very motivated and serious. And I found that, I mean, not that they were not fun-loving people, because they really were.
Right.
But that they were starving for information and classes and instructors. They were just starving for knowledge on quilting. And they were so serious about what they were doing. They really were motivated to learn, which was really cool. So I loved that. I love it that I feel like in going to other countries and making friends with quilters in other places, too, that it kind of is contributing to world peace, I hope. I know that sounds kind of silly, but didn't you feel like that?
I do. I felt like an ambassador.
Right.
You know, for my not only my work and for quilting, but for my country. And I felt that a lot in South Africa. Where the people hadn't really worked with an American quilter much before. And I had not worked with South African quilters before. So there was a little bit of a love fest of getting to know each other and our countries, getting to know each other's countries. Because
and
my students actually asked me a lot about my country and where I lived. So that was fun.
And just to have something wonderful in common to share makes you this quilting is in common, makes you realize how many other things we have in common and how we really should all be friends, you know?
So. Yeah, I know. It's like, let's all hold hands. It was awesome.
Right.
I just love it, but it's so true. It is.
And I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to travel and see some of the world. I've always loved to travel. And, you know, for a while when I was having my children and they were young, I wasn't able to do, or, and I didn't have the money to do it. And now to have the opportunity to go other places, and here again, feed the creativity, you know. I took thousands of photos and came back so inspired by the things in those environments that were different from where I live.
Yeah, it's just, it is a great eye-opener for your creativity.
Yeah.
I want to get in the free motion embroidery that you've been doing lately, because this is something I think people can really, really add to their repertoire. We have a couple minutes left. Do you want to tell me about it?
Yeah, well, this is actually something I started doing. I was traveling a lot. I was sitting on these planes and long trips, and I thought, I need some more handwork things to do, and I do applique. But I started thinking it would be really nice to have a jacket that I could wear if it gets cold on the plane, and maybe I could embroider it. So I got a really cheap jean jacket for $3 from a thrift store, and I started embroidering it all over with pearl cotton. And I put some sewing motifs like pincushions and thimbles and needles and spools of thread, and I outlined them first. And then I did kind of like simple chicken scratch, I call it, just little stitches all over. It is so fun and so relaxing, and it keeps my blood pressure down while I'm flying.
See, not anybody can do that. Just a needle thread and a $3 jeans jacket. So
yeah, I mean, it's super easy. You can go, you can look at the pictures I've got and see what I did. But it's really simple, but it's so fun. And so now I've started doing it on other things. I've got aprons in progress, and I think I bought a canvas, like a backpack kind of thing that I have put some dye on, and now I'm embroidering it too. It's very relaxing.
Well, Susan, this has been incredible. I just loved having you on.
I love talking to you. Thank you.
I want everybody to know that Susan, you can watch her on PBS because she is the host of Quilting Arts TV. So that is just wonderful. You can go out and see what she's doing.
People, check us out.
Yes, check her out, and you get more of her whenever you like. So thank you for being here. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. You can join them at allpeoplequilt.com. I am Pat Sloan. You can find me at patsloan.com, and I'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.